Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
Hi, Mark DeLuzio. Episode 56 of the Lean 911 podcast. I want to talk about Kaizen. The title of this episode is Death by Kaizen and why you need Kaikaku. And I'll talk about Kaikaku in a bit, but I want to talk a little bit about death by point Kaizen. What do I mean by point Kaizen? I think everybody kind of knows what a Kaizen is. You could talk about it as an event. Consultants like to have five-day events so they can fill their schedules. They don't have to be five-day events. It could be one-day events. It could be three-day events. It could be longer than that. However, point Kaizen is going into a very specific area of your company and improving it. Usually using a number of lean tools to do so. Now, just one thing I want you to keep in mind is that when you go and improve an area, and if you say, okay, the tool we're going to use this time is 5S, or the tool that we're going to use is standard work, or we're going to use single-minute exchange of die, and if you're not talking about other tools that go along with it, you're thinking about it wrong and you're listening to the wrong consultants, because consultants love to sell you lean by the tool. And that's not how it works. You do not build a house by just hiring a guy that knows how to swing a hammer. So these are eclectic tools. Matter of fact, when you think about it from a Toyota perspective, the people there don't look at these as separate tools in a toolbox. They look at them very like a, almost like a Venn diagram, an eclectic point, if you will, where they look at these as how they all come together. For example, I can't do single-minute exchange of die without talking about 5S. And how does that relate into my Kanban if I have Kanbans? Okay, there's three things right there that I need to talk about, all right? Never mind visual management. Never mind all kinds of other things like standardization. So don't fall into that trap, but a point Kaizen will go into a specific area. For example, we're going to create a cell, create one piece flow, and put in standard work. It's a point Kaizen. Or we're going to go into this cell and see if we can work on a quality problem. Or we're going to implement total productive maintenance. Or we're going to implement a Kanban so that we could pull production from one part of the shop to the other. Or we're going to create flow. All right. So these are point Kaizens that are going into specific areas of your company and making the necessary improvements. Now, I'm calling this first part of this title Death by Point Kaizen. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not saying that you should just stop and abandon all of your point Kaizens. It's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is this: if point Kaizens are the only vehicle of choice in your lean transformation, it's not going to work. Sooner or later, you're going to run into those parts of your company that are not changing, that have not opened themselves up to Kaizen, and you'll find that your improvements are limited. And you'll find that your improvements are not sustainable. So now that we know what a point Kaizen is, and again, here's another, and I like to go outside of business and talk about point Kaizens. I just joined the gym and I'm going to go in and, you know, I'm going to work on my two biceps. And I'll tell you right now, in 3 or 4 months, I am going to have the most awesome biceps that you've ever seen. As far as the rest of my body goes, not so good, right? But I did point Kaizen on those biceps, and believe you me, you're going to be impressed, okay? Guess what? I'm not going to win Mr. Universe by just working on my biceps. Okay. So that's another way to think about this. Are we working on the whole? Well, what does that really mean? When we put the Danaher business system together, it was initially, it started from the Jacobs production system at Jake Break, where I was lucky enough to be hired by George Conosacre and Art Byrne. And in 1987, we brought in Shingajitsu, and we started a bunch of point Kaizens with Shingajitsu, okay? And we made tremendous improvements. Don't get me wrong. We made unbelievable improvements without the need, by the way, of a value stream map. And I guess I'll talk about that some other day. But we soon learned that we needed to take... starting with the Jacobs production system... It was a carbon copy of TPS, as best that we could think about that at that time. And we then created pretty much a carbon copy called the Danaher production system. Well, when I was asked to lead the charge for Danaher, coming out of what we learned at Jake Break, we sat down and said, you know, this has got to be more than just a production manufacturing thing. It's really got to be enterprise-wide. So we thought, we're going to call this the Danaher business system because there's waste in all these different functions, whether it's marketing, HR, finance, engineering. I mean, you go down the list. So we said, yeah, well, let's call it the Danaher business system because we're going to take waste out of all these functions, which, by the way, is not a bad thing to do. However, we didn't realize it at the time until we started working with strategy deployment, or what we call policy deployment. Now, we toyed around with this a little bit at Jake Break, and we did make fundamental changes as to how the entire enterprise did business. So we did change finance. My group, when I was CFO, before I took over operations, was 25 people. I got rid of a IBM 4381 Halon system, huge. We had data analysts and we had programmers and all this. We went to a $350,000 PC based system, software and all, okay, because we simplified the business. We didn't need a very sophisticated ERP system, okay. And other areas of the business did the same thing. Engineering lead time on new product development went from 72 months to 18. We didn't do that, we would not be able to play in Japan with Toyota, Sino Motors, and Mitsubishi heavy-duty engines. So the company made drastic changes outside of manufacturing, but the Japanese weren't all that much help with us in that regard, okay, because they were primarily shop floor focused. So we had to learn how to do this in the administrative areas and all of that. Okay, well, fine. I took the remnants of what we did with policy deployment at Jake Break and took it into DBS. And what we learned eventually is, yeah, there's waste in functions and we got to take out waste. And, you know, we don't need four people doing accounts payable when we can improve the quality and relocate three of those people somewhere else and do it with one. Okay. That's not necessarily breakthrough. Maybe it is for the accounts payable process, but that's not necessarily breakthrough for the company. So we knew we had to take waste out, but what we learned through the policy deployment process is that a breakthrough, a significant radical change, which the Japanese call kaikaku, okay? In order for us to really hit a breakthrough, we needed multifunctional involvement and cooperation. We could no longer asked to have the best HR department and the best IT department and the best engineering department. We needed to work together as one muscle. So let me go back to my gym analogy. In order for me to be Mr. Universe, and by the way, I know you guys are joking out there saying I never will, but let's just say work with me on this, okay? In order for me to be Mr. Universe, I'll put it this way, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he couldn't just go in and work on his biceps. He had to look at his whole physique. He had to look at his nutrition. He had to work out look at his workout regimen. He had to do a lot of point kaizen on his body, but he also needed to do breakthrough kaikaku on his overall aura and body itself. Okay, so this became bigger than just going in and punching in a bunch of weights. All right. And that's why lean sometimes fails, because we continue on this point kaizen journey, but never think about kaikaku. Well, with policy deployment, again, what I'm calling today strategy deployment, some call it Hoshin planning, Hoshin Kanri, is you need a multifunctional team to work together to enact breakthrough. That means every single function in the company has to change. You cannot have, for example, traditional finance do traditional cost accounting while you're trying to do a lean transformation on the shop floor. You can't have your planning group insisting on MRP scheduling. Matter of fact, I did a episode with Jerry Wright on his new book called The Insanity Trap. Go check that out. Go check that episode out and learn how MRP is counter to lean thinking. Okay? So I just mentioned two things, by the way. MRP systems and your financial systems. You need significant shifts in how you do those things in order for your lean transformation to work. You need kaikaku. So when we put strategy deployment together, we are, one of the criteria of breakthrough or kaikaku in our mind was, we don't know how to do it. We have no idea how to do it. We have no idea how we're going to go in and, you know, go to true pull manufacturing, single point scheduling, because every business is different and every business has its own unique challenges. So we had to kind of go back and figure all that stuff out so we can actually turn off MRP as it relates to shop floor scheduling and procurement from our suppliers. Okay. So these are the breakthroughs. Now, in order for that to happen, everybody had to work together. Purchasing, the sales group, engineering, manufacturing, finance. We all had to work together as one muscle, not as a bicep, not as a calf muscle, as one body, as one unified approach in order to affect that level of change. Okay. And this is where a lot of companies go wrong. Many look at lean as a manufacturing thing. Many look at lean, many CEOs look at lean like they never go into the sales group and challenge what's going on there. We never go and question how we price our product. We never go in and sometimes even understand why we're losing market share. Okay, it's got to be enterprise-wide, and it can't be a singular function. You know, as a matter of fact, I came up with a saying that said that if you try to optimize any one function in the organization, you will eventually suboptimize the enterprise. I've seen it time and time again. Let me give you a case in point. Had a client whose sales group was the end of the quarter, and they had to hit their numbers, and they weren't hitting their numbers. So what do? They went to the customers, discounted the heck on the product, incentivized their customers to take product early. Okay, so boom, right there, red flag should go off in your mind. The company just violated the just-in-time principle. Okay? That flag didn't go off in your head right away when I said that. I want you to be looking for these clues. Look for the reasons why we're violating these principles. Now, why did they do that? The sales guys wanted to make their numbers. The company wanted to hit their sales goal. Okay. 30% of the orders that month came on the last 2 days of the month. The sales guys were compensated based on shipments, not on orders. So the cost involved and the overtime and the weekends and all that was insurmountable. Matter of fact, they didn't get all the product out, just to let you know. But the cost associated with trying to jam this stuff through, by the way, this company was, we were trying to get them to do high-junco level scheduling. with standard work, one piece flow, all the things that, you know, you probably came to know and love. Well, now this company had to pull people from distribution to work on the shop floor, untrained people trying to get product out. It was chaos, total chaos. But guess what? The sales guys got their bonuses. The sales guys got their cruise ships and made what they called the President's Club. So they won. The customer won because the purchasing guys there were measured on purchase price variance, so they got a lower price. So not only did we discount the product and take a haircut on the top line, we took a haircut on the bottom line too, because our costs increased to get this discounted product out the door when the customer didn't need the product. Okay. That's what I'm talking about with an organization not working together, all being in concert with the principles. In this case, a very simple principle called just in time. To further add pain to this story, the following month, they didn't have any orders. Yeah, they shipped out the remnants of what was left from the previous month. But the first 2 weeks of the month were like nothing going on, because they already forced the customers to take a month or two's worth of supply in the previous month. The havoc that's been caused. So this is Mura and Miri, by the way. Okay, you want to look at Mura, which is unevenness, and Miri, which is overburdening or unreasonableness, I like to call it. Okay. In order to attack Mura and Miri, you need to have an enterprise-wide approach where everybody's on the same page, where we have policies that are consistent with each other. So you can point Kaizen all you want in an environment like I just described, and good luck. You'll point Kaizen yourself right out the door, okay, because you're going to fail. So the breakthrough really is, how do we look at the company and understand what has to happen on a enterprise level in order for us to take that next breakthrough, or as the Japanese like to call it, kaikaku. Again, radical change. That's a radical change where you get everybody on the same page. And we all agree on single point scheduling, and we know how to pull product, raw materials, let's say, from our suppliers, and that we are in concert with the marketplace. We have a good sales and operations planning process that informs us as to true demand. All these things have to work together. We don't have a CFO banging down your door for more production because he needs absorption credit to make his accounting numbers look good. Meanwhile, you're throwing cash out the window. And that will rear its ugly head later in the year. But right now, he's worried about this month because everybody's worried about their bonuses. You see how all this has to work together? So that's a real key. And, you know, one of the things to think about is when you do point Kaizen, you will open doors that were closed to you before, not only for future Kaizen, but you will open doors that will lead you to Kaikaku. You will open doors that will lead you to innovation. You will, matter of fact, hit brick walls to say, geez, we can't do this because of this policy or that policy, and we need to change. Things like, well, geez, we're working in a functional environment, but we're talking value streams. Boy, I've got value streams all around the factory, but we don't really have any value streams. All they are is cartoons, post-it notes on a wall. We don't really operate as a value stream. We still got functional leaders who have functional goals, who are driving functional behaviors, so they get their functional bonus. We don't have value streams. We have fake lean is what we have. So in a lot of respects, going to a true value stream organization is a radical change, is a kaikaku. Okay. with that value stream leader, however you design to find your value stream, and there's a number of ways to do that, has full control over their destiny, whether it be resources, whether it be support functions, all that. Okay. So I want you to think about what you're doing with Kaizen. I mean, don't stop. I'm not telling you to stop your point Kaizens. They are necessary. Okay. But you need more. You need a higher level of thinking to support the things that you're doing on your point Kaizen journey. So again, Kaizen is going to open up the door to innovation. Another thing I want you to think about is you will never be great if you try to optimize a process or a situation that is suboptimal to begin with. For example, if you try to be really good at MRP, at best, you're going to be a B minus. At best, you're going to be a B minus player. I even doubt you'll get that high. If you try to optimize the productivity in your rework area, well, good luck with that. Instead of focusing on getting rid of the rework. I had a client one time, they had 21 people in a rework area that was demanded by their customer because of their poor quality. Now, what these people were doing was they were bagging a bunch of parts. That was the original production. And the customer was finding that the part count was all wrong. They would take all these little bags to this rework area. The employees would open up the bags, recount them, and put them into new bags. I can't even describe to you how ludicrous that is, okay? Like the second process is going to be better than the first one. So they said to me, Mark, we would like you guys to come in and do standard work in the rework area. I absolutely refused. I said, absolutely not. I will work with you on figuring out your quality problem so that the rework area can go away. But again, this was just another thought about how are we going to get better at something we shouldn't be doing in the first place. As I put it earlier, they wanted to optimize something that was suboptimal. You will never be great when you try to do that. Okay. One last thing. The way your company does Kaizen, is that not open to future Kaizens? Is the Kaizen process itself immune to Kaizen? Can the way you do Kaizen be improved? Hopefully you're sitting there saying yes, okay? Because when you look at getting really good at Kaizen, so many companies out there today I run into, doing a Kaizen is like a big deal, man. And it's like, geez, you know, we got planned 2 months ahead and then we're all ready to go. And, you know, it's almost like planning a wedding that you do once in your life, hopefully once in your life. Okay. It shouldn't be like planning a wedding. You should develop your Kaizen muscle where that's easy. And you got all your standard work in place. How do you do prep? How do you do a charter? How do you get ready for a Kaizen? Whether it's admin or manufacturing. What are your ground rules for a Kaizen? I have quite a few episodes, I believe, in this podcast series that talks about Kaizen and how you think about Kaizen. Right? It shouldn't be like planning a wedding, right? Where it's a one-time deal. It should be easy. It should be like muscle memory. You know, I'll go back to Jake Break back when I was there. It was a great experience. We were moving equipment like you and I would maybe shift our shoes in our closet. That's how easy it was for us. We were moving big CNC equipment with overhead, air lines and power lines and everything else. we removed them like they were yesterday's news. It was no big deal. No big deal to us. We read that at the factory a dozen times at least in the 5 years I was there. I'm talking about relay out the factory. I'm not talking about moving one machine here to there. We were Kaizen-ing that factory like you wouldn't believe. The muscle that we had, our maintenance guys, everybody is in concert. Okay. I mean, it was incredible how we didn't even sneeze at the fact that we're going to move a line and free up 50% of the floor space in the shop, which is what we did. We took the business from a $60 million business to a $225 million business. It's the same headcount and the same floor space. By the way, UAW headcount, okay? And they were great to work with. Yeah, we had our normal unit problems, but they were people, and they were good people, okay? And so I never want to hear it doesn't work in a union environment either. That's maybe a subject for another day. But what I'm trying to get at is you need to Kaizen how you do Kaizen. As a matter of fact, maybe you need a Keikaku on how you do Kaizen. Something to think about, okay? But I'll leave you with this. If you're only doing point Kaizen and you are working on suboptimal situations in your company, trying to make them optimal, you will never, never move the needle where you could look back and say, you know what, that was a real success. And that's a problem a lot of companies have today. And unfortunately, a lot of this has to do with leadership. You know, that's a subject for another day, but a lot of this has to do with leadership in terms of really challenging every single department. And Art Byrne says this on one of my earlier podcasts with him. Art Byrne from Danaher and Wiremold fame said, everybody's job has to change. Everybody's job has to change. And if you're not doing that, and if you've got your finance guy standing there with a clipboard taking score, while you're in the arena with the Lions and they're in the stands being spectators, it's not going to work. Sorry. It's not going to work. The enterprise has to work together, and that's the only way you're going to drive true Kaikaku. Okay? All right. Episode 56, Death by Point Kaizen and Why You Need Kaikaku. Email me at Mark, M-A-R-K, at lean911.com. Love to get your questions. Love to converse. Until next time. Episode 56. Take care now.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.